hey, what's going on? Happy Wednesday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. This is your home for daily Reds content all spring training long. We've got new episodes 7 days a week, recapping each of the Reds Cactus League games. Well, the Reds lost again 10-6 to the Angels on Tuesday afternoon. The Reds have now lost 5 straight games to fall to 9-11-2 this spring. I'll tell you about the game, some Reds news, as there was quite a bit of that once again, and also a very special interview coming up later on with Chris Solomon, better known as Solly, from the number one golf podcast in the United States called No Laying Up. This will be a little bit of a longer one today. When you get me and Solly talking Reds baseball, we'll go for quite a while, and I really enjoy that. I think you will as well. But first, I want to tell you about our proud sponsor, and that is Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production. They specialize in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks, as always, to our friends at DSC. Well, tough afternoon for Hunter Green on Tuesday. He gave up 7 runs over 4 1/3 innings pitched. He did strike out 6 batters and walked 2. Kind of a weird game for Green overall. He threw a scoreless first, just gave up a walk. But then in the second, he gave up 3 hits, including a home run to 2022 13th overall pick Zach Neto, the Angels shortstop. Hunter Green then really bounced back. He threw a perfect third and a perfect fourth inning. But then he gave up hits to 4 of the first 5 batters in the fifth before being pulled. Couple more runs scored after he left. Oddly enough, the only batter that Green got out in the fifth was a strikeout swing from Mike Trout. There was some shaky defense from the Reds, especially Steer at second base in the fifth, that didn't help Green's cause. Here's what Hunter Green had to say after the game, this courtesy of Gordon Whitmire of the Cincinnati Enquirer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I threw a good amount of splits today. None of them were hit. I think I got like 2 weak foul balls that kind of set up the fastball, which was great. And then got a lot of swing and miss on the curveball and some weak contact in the curveball. So it was great.
You feel like you're close enough or you've got enough work in this spring that this one last start can just make you 100% ready?
Yeah, I mean, when you say 100% ready, I mean, there's guys that are in the rotation that have had great outings. There's guys that have struggled, like myself, and I think every other guy.
I'm just talking about what you were saying is kind of come and gone for you. Like what you said earlier about it's today was kind of the story of your last few outings.
Yeah. You just saying, just clean, like, how do I clean that up?
Yeah, just, you know, you got that one start left before the season
starts. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and panic and try and be like, oh, I got to be perfect in this last outing before spring. It's just little adjustments, you know, that I'll make, and I got to, you know, watch the film and see what today was about. But, I mean, I had some really electric innings, so it's, you know, being able to focus on the good stuff, you know, but also being able to focus on the stuff that I lacked, and that's what makes us, you know, better, and, you know, being able to humble ourselves to figure out what that is, but it's still a lot of positives from today.
Tough afternoon also for Alexis Diaz. He went an inning in a third, gave up 2 hits, 2 earned runs, a walk, and a strikeout. On the offensive side of the ball, Stuart Fairchild, his incredible spring just continued. 2 for 4, 2 doubles, hitting .379 with an OPS over 1,200 in Cactus League play. Tyler Stevenson, he was 2 for 4 with a double. And don't look now, but after that really rough start for Tyler Stevenson, he now has an OPS over 900. Mike Ford, he was 2 for 4, hitting now .423 with a .982 OPS, doing absolutely everything he can to make the team. And Bubba Thompson got the start, batted 9th, and he hit a home run in this game. Fortunately, Ellie De La Cruz was 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. All right, to some Reds news, Brandon Williamson will start the season on the IL due to a sore shoulder. So that means we have an official rotation for the Reds to start the season. It'll be Frankie Montas, Hunter Green, Graham Ashcraft, Nick Martinez, and Andrew Abbott. Of course, Nick Lodolo is still hanging around, expected to be ready around April 10th. So barring injury, which we hope is definitely not the case, Lodolo will be replacing someone from that starting rotation to start the season. Matt McClain also still dealing with a sore shoulder. That is very hard to say. Sore shoulder. Doing my best I can on that one, as the Reds have a lot of those. The Reds are hoping Matt McClain will be ready for opening day, but McClain is starting to run out of time as opening day is getting really close. Tony Kemp, he officially opted out of his contract after being reassigned to minor league camp on Monday. All right. Well, here is my interview with Sully. I think you'll really enjoy this one. Stick around at the end. I'll tell you about the games on Wednesday. There's two of them for the Reds. All right. I am joined by my guy, Sully, Chris Solomon of the No Laying Up podcast. Always an honor to have Sully on. I got to ask you first. So originally you were just running the No Laying Up Twitter account. Hopefully I'm not giving up too many trade secrets here. And then you're now fully invested in Reds Twitter with @Sully_Reds. Was that a mistake?
No, I honestly, like, golf Twitter's gotten so toxic lately that I enjoy flipping over to this and just like catching up on things. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I haven't been on the show in a long time, but, you know, I detailed it last summer that I fell out of love with baseball for quite some time. And like last summer really brought me in. The pitch clock brought me back in. The shift ban made baseball a lot more exciting. And it's just a fun way to pass. I used to be so into it. I would follow all the minor leagues and like getting back up to date. Following a bunch of you guys that you know, follow the minor leagues, give us a reason to get excited about things. And I've always had, like, I run the brand account, which, like, is really weird to be personal on. And I've always kind of wanted my own place to, like, say my own thoughts on things. And so, I don't know. I like having an isolated something that's solely dedicated to the Reds. And I've had fun getting on there, mixing it up, meeting some good people so far.
Well, I'm personally very happy to have you on. And I'm going to shout him out. The link is in the episode notes below if you want to follow Sully on his Reds account.
I might be one of the bitter. I can't figure it out. Like I try not to be one of the bitter Reds fan accounts, but like I can sense myself drifting into it right from time to time. You know, I'm a little upset about the center field situation. And I'm a little concerned about our Reds right now. I feel like they bought a really, really nice car and they're putting like the unleaded fuel, like the they're not putting the premium fuel in it right now. Like they've spent a lot of money and I'm happy about a lot of it. It just seemed like there was just like one or two more moves that were kind of seem obvious that make me wonder, what do they know that we don't? What do they, that's one thing like working in sports has taught me is like, I mean, most of us fans are idiots. Like they're working with a bigger set of information than we have, right? There's a reason why they didn't go get somebody else that can play center field. I just don't know what it is yet, so I'm uncomfortable right now.
So let's jump into the center field, because over the last week, I've kind of, like, I was pretty happy with what the Reds did over the offseason. There's one guy in particular I want to ask you about, because you had him first, is what we'll say. We'll tease that for a little bit. Like, I think when I saw, like, the Blake Snell deal, I was like, oh, man, I wish the Reds would have got that. Like, that was one that and if Jordan Montgomery signs another deal, those are ones that, man, those were short deals. They fit the timeline that I think a lot of us feel is in the best interest for the Reds. Now, again, those pitchers have to want to come on a short-term deal to Great America Ballpark, so there's always that caveat. But I don't know. Am I just too big of a Stuart Fairchild fanboy that I just look at him and Michael A. Taylor, and I go, is Michael A. Taylor really better than Stuart Fairchild?
So I think there's spots for both of them is my position on this. I think I'm a huge defense guy. You know this. I think it's really important. Harrison Bader was not a good offensive player when he came to the Reds, but man, when he played center field and that ball went anywhere near there, that dude tracked it down. Like that is, I just value that a lot. And I think people tend to, not saying you, but I think people tend to want to fill out a great lineup that looks great. And I just think over 162 games with the Reds pitching the way it is, it can be good, but they're not putting enough batters away and they're not hitting enough balls on the ground for me to just punt on outfield defense to say there is plenty of playing time, in my opinion, for Taylor. If the Reds are going to platoon, they're going to have Fraley and Benson in the starting lineup. They're going to get hit with lefties late in the game, which, you know, we could have right-handed pinch hitters, and we need to have somebody else that's going to be able to sub in and play the defense in the late innings. I think that's just an important thing. If you can go to a Friedel, Taylor, Fairchild outfield at the end of a game, I feel pretty darn good about that. I feel really good about that. And against lefties, that's probably your starting outfield. And if you want to give Friedel his off days, they'll probably come against lefties. He does fine against lefties, but you might as well rest him against lefties. You can put Steer or India out there, and you have, you know, your all righty hitting outfield. And it just felt like, and I get it, this wasn't, this was a problem before the Marte suspension, which even then, if you needed to start Noelvi Marte in AAA, you could have. I just don't feel really comfortable like penciling Spencer Steer in as an outfielder. Spencer Steer, in my mind, is a DH so far until proven otherwise. He's not been a good infielder. He was a very bad outfielder last year. I've heard him be referred to as playing the Ben Zobrist role, and the difference is Ben Zobrist played defense in all of those positions, and just putting him somewhere, Reds just have maybe one too many DHs in my mind, and adding some defenders would have been really valuable. I need your help a little bit and fill me in on like what Taylor is getting out of Pittsburgh that he wouldn't be able to get in Cincinnati. I'm not up to speed on all what the other teams have cooking and everything. I know he's probably got more playing time available, prior to the Friedel injury, but it just felt like, honestly, at $8 million, I was still okay with Taylor. That's what FanCraft projected him at, and going at $4 million, that was just like, oh man, that is a stomach punch.
So first off, I'm completely with you on the defense. That's probably my number one concern right now with this team. I mean, if you're talking, you know, Benson, Fraley, and Steer, or you know, even if you're talking the other side of the platoon, you're talking Fairchild, maybe Steer and India on both corners. I don't think they'll do that, but you never know. It's definitely a concern. Friedel made up a lot of that, and Noelvi Marte kind of made up a lot of that. It felt like when both of those guys who are plus defenders, especially Marte, I think we all believe he's going to become a potential Gold Glove caliber defender. It kind of masked him. You could kind of mask with some of the other spots, but now it's kind of like, oh, you have a lot of negatives as opposed to just a couple that you were kind of working around. The Taylor thing, I'm assuming he went to Pittsburgh. I mean, I'm assuming he's pretty much guaranteed playing time a lot more than he would have with the Reds pre-Friedel. It would have made a lot more sense if it had been before the Friedel. But again, even Friedel, he's not going to be out forever. So that's where I think you would have, and this is just me guessing, you would have had to make a decision, Fairchild or Taylor. And for me, I would rather keep that money, and I would have invested that in just another quality reliever, or putting that towards maybe another starting pitcher or something like that. But I think it's kind of is what it is at this point. There's almost no turning back right now unless there's some sort of trade partner out there.
Yeah. Do you think it's an either or though? Like I still, and I have no idea what the Reds budget is. None of us know what the Reds budget is. I just don't think it's an either or with how low it already is, right? Of save that money on Taylor and have it go elsewhere. It just feels like they can spend $5 more million and shore up what was, I mean, you can't have perfect depth at every position. Like that's unrealistic expectation. And they've done so well in filling in the depth that it's going to be needed right off the jump. And like, you still, the lineup that gets rolled out on opening day against a righty is going to look pretty darn good. Like it's not like you're going to be screaming about missing somebody on that day, but it's 162 games. And it just, I don't know. We've been saving right-handed outfield bat for months and months and months. The thing I'll fall back on is Blake Dunn the dude, right? And maybe, you know, I know they don't like to have guys bypassing AAA straight to the roster, but he's an older prospect. He excelled at every level last year. The projection systems love him. Like some projection systems are projecting over 2 WAR at a 600 at bat pace for next, for this coming year, which you don't know how well he's going to do facing major league pitching, but is that the reason why? Would be the question I would ask. Did they think they could at least get it a part of the way into the season before having to make that decision and assuming Friedel wouldn't get hurt? Probably, but that's the only fallback right now of like, who's somebody that I think they could get like some lightning in a bottle production from in these first few months of the year? And I honestly don't know, pretend to know exactly how spring training works and minor league camp and all that, but I'm kind of surprised they're not giving him a more extended look this spring.
It's funny. I was literally thinking Blake Dunn when it came through your mouth. So we're on the same page there. I did see Blake Dunn play a minor league game on the backfields last week. Looked good. He led off with a triple, but I mean, you know, again, how much you're going to make out of a minor league backfield game. He was hurt at the beginning of camp, so I think that pretty much in itself made him, we're not going to push it type thing. But I mean, he's a guy that has absolutely excelled at every level. Everyone I've ever talked to loves this guy, loves his makeup and all that kind of stuff. So it might be a situation too, where you look at Blake Dunn, you look at you, the Reds really like Stuart Fairchild, and it, spring training stats don't mean a whole lot, but so far he's at least taken absolutely advantage of his opportunity. I almost wonder if the Reds are in a situation where they're a little gun shy with like what happened with Will Myers last year. We don't want to go sign Michael A. Taylor and then we have to DFA him in mid-May because Blake Dunn starts in AAA and he's on fire and Stuart Fairchild plays well. And we thought we were going to have TJ Friedl and Noelvi Marte.
Yeah.
That's probably where my head's at a little bit more, but I do wish they would have gone a little bit further and, you know, maybe either replaced Astier or India with a bona fide slugging DH, a JD Martinez or a Jorge Soler, or went out and got a bona fide ace. So that's just kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. With Taylor though, the deciding factor for me is like defense doesn't slump unless he's going to truly slow down. He's not young. He's what, 33, like maybe going into this year. Sure. Maybe his defense does take a hit. Maybe that's what their metric's showing. He was a better center fielder in 2021 than he was in 2023, but he's really good. Like really, really good. Not like average. He's a better defensive center fielder than Friedl is, right? And I love TJ Friedl, but that is going to have value just no matter what. It's an extremely important defensive position. And the Reds don't have weak bats in the lineup. If Taylor has, you know, he crushed lefties last year. His career, he hasn't really crushed lefties. He might not be a lefty killer, but he can start against left-handed pitching. I don't need him starting against righties. And if I'm him at that age, I'd rather have more money than like the guaranteed playing time against righties just to strike out a bunch and not get on base. His numbers against righties are really not good. But you know, you can't pretend to know why people make decisions or if there was offers or chats or, you know, if why they wouldn't want him, you know, but it, the Reds, I'm torn on this because I am bullish for the window. I'm really bullish for this Reds window. I'm slightly bearish compared to a lot of Reds fans. I think for 2024, I think 2023, the Reds outperformed their skill. They got way better than anybody expected, which I think is leading people to assume that this trend line only goes up. And I think we're just kind of starting from a different baseline in this coming year when you reset the Pythag and all that stuff of, if you look at StatCast, look at some batting average on balls in play stuff from last year, it's an average-ish offense. It is when you, you know, establish the park factor and all that stuff. That's not to say guys can't take huge leaps. I think there's 3 to 4 guys that are huge candidates to take leaps, but I still think the Reds are a little bit, like, how I'll defend them here is I think they're a little bit still in let's see what we have mode and not shipping out Spencer Steer because he doesn't have a defensive position. Because if I'm adding up the flaws, Steer's defense, the platoon issue we have with Benson and Fraley, and their defense being a little bit on the weak side, plus Encarnacion Strand being maybe a DH, maybe a fielder, we'll see. Also adding in Martini and Ford that don't really have a ton of defensive value, it just seems like there's a lot of imperfections here that it's you'd rather have guys you can say, all right, versus a lefty and a righty, I can count on you to do this. That's why I love Candelario signing so much was he's going to face lefties, he's going to face righties, and he plays good defense. Like that is worth $15 million. It really is. But figuring out what all these guys are going to be worth is before making a seismic move of shipping anybody out or making a big trade is clearly what they're going to go with.
Yeah, and you just mentioned Candelario. Obviously, he's had a really tough spring up until, what day is it? Up until Monday, had a double and a triple, kind of finally broke through. I mean, he's a pro. I know he had a bad spring. I know our guy Bryce Spalding tweeted out his spring stats from a year ago, and they were pretty rough as well. Not as rough as this year, but it is what it is. But it was so ironic because we had you on a show preaching the Rich Inside Candelario, and then like 3 hours night. Later at like 1:30 in the morning, they sign him. And I mean, I won't say the Reds were listening, but maybe the Reds were listening.
And I really didn't understand the national reaction to it and lacking of understanding of why they did it. Again, if there was a switch hitting outfielder that played average defense in the outfield. I think the Reds would have gone for that. I think they would have preferred an outfielder if they could have, but I didn't see that guy on the market that, you know, fit this profile. I mean, they got him early-ish in free agency. They clearly really like something about him. I think his value, his production is going to be potentially a little underrated by Reds fans. If he just does what he did last year, it's not going to jump off the page. I think some fans are going to be pretty hard, ride him pretty hard for $15 million a year, a price we're not used to paying free agents. But when you add up the defense at a corner position, which he's going to play a lot, I think, and the fact that he hit lefties, can hit righties, and be an above average bat, if he does all those things, he's worth the money. If he's between a 2 and 3 win player, which I think he definitely should be, that is worth the money. It's not going to greatly change the fortunes of the Reds, but that's a good use of money in my mind.
Yeah, the whole too many infielders thing kind of doesn't stick when India's playing first base and Sears playing left field. Like, they were never infielders. The Reds never view those guys as like actual infielders. And I think that was the thing that so many people missed. All right. So we got our set rotation, at least for maybe the first week of the season today. Montas will be on opening day. We got Green, Ashcraft. Nick Martinez makes the rotation, pitch really, really well in spring, and Andrew Abbott. The depth has faded a lot. It has, but I think people are still forgetting there's still the Connor Phillips fella.
Yeah.
There's still Carson Spires.
And Lodolo's right there. He's
and
coming.
And Lodolo's literally going to be up in a week. Now, the Reds can't afford two more, like, would be the breaking point. But this is still a hell of a lot better rotation than we saw for the entire year, really, last year.
Yeah. First off, we got to get to this happening, but I think Trace is going to owe me an apology. If you remember, we made an apology bet on Nick Martinez, whether or not he'd be in the opening day rotation or not. Kind of backed into that one, but I was I was pretty steadfast that he was going to start at the price that I don't know if he would have if the injuries hadn't happened, but I look forward to that. This is just where I'm in that. I miss this feeling. I miss these times of, do I care about the spring training stats or do I not? Right? Because if I do, I'm concerned about the rotation right now, but also nothing matters until, you know, practice rounds before major championships don't matter. It's called spring training. They're not called games. Like, you're working on stuff. Would I love it if Hunter Green was missing more bats right now? Sure, I would. I would love it if he was coming in with a bit more confidence. Sure, I would. Frankie Montas, do we know what we have yet? I don't think we do. I'm surprised he was named opening day starter. But there's reason to be optimistic. There is depth there. I just don't know what we have. You know, I feel pretty confident that I know what the offense is-ish. I think it's going to be around an average offense in the majors. And I think the pitching staff can be above average, but the way the injuries are trending and just my 30 years of being a Reds fan has me nervous about it.
It feels like the entire rotation, you look at them up and down, you go, I could see that guy having a 3.5 ERA, or I could see that guy having a 5 ERA. Like, literally every single one of them. Probably Nick Lodolo is the only guy that I feel confident if he pitches, he's going to have a above average ERA. Everyone else, like, I feel good about Hunter Green. I feel like he's trending that way, but I don't know for sure. Frankie Montas, I don't know. Graham Ashcraft, he's been the best pitcher on the planet and the worst pitcher on the planet literally week to week. It might be Nick Martinez might end up being the ace of the staff. It's a wild rotation, but I, every time I get concerned, I just go, I just look at the game logs from last year. Some of the guys we ran out there, and I go, well, it's actually it's still pretty good. And then you also compare it to like the St. Louis Cardinals, and you're like, this actually looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's definitely an improvement. I'm hesitant on this, right? I understand I root for a small market team. I understand there's constraints here. I don't enjoy this fact, but it is hard to watch the Snell thing happen and the Montgomery thing still continue on to this point. I mean, if we could have Montgomery for 2 years, $62 million right now, would you sign up for that? Like, I think all of us would. And you know what? I don't know if I buy anymore is with all these metrics we have, I don't know if I buy short-term deal doesn't want to come to Great American Ballpark. I mean, scouts, agents, all this know how to look for underlying factors. And I don't know if coming to a home run friendly park necessarily kills your value. I don't know. That just always seems like something I hear a lot. And I've long thought that, but I'm also like, we have all of these metrics. We have spin rates. We have blah, blah, blah about these pitchers, stuff plus all of this, you know, a few extra fly balls getting out of a ballpark. I don't know if that really changes anything, but I get it exists from an ego standpoint for pitchers, but also, are you going to turn down more money just to go pitch, you know, somewhere else that has a little more friendly park? I don't know what the goal of that would be.
Yeah, it just probably depends how good of a salesman you are, and then, you know, how much the pitcher feels about it. But I'm with you. I don't think there's a such thing as overpaying for a starting pitcher on a 2-year deal. I just don't think that really exists. I would much rather pay $60 million for Blake Snell for a 2-year deal than $180 for a 7-year deal or whatever. Sure. The math works out to. So yeah, I'm with you on that. I was thinking back to last year when I was looking for tickets for opening day for the Reds and just how difficult it was to not only find tickets, but find them at a decent price without a bunch of crazy hidden fees. Well, the Game Time app is now an authorized ticket marketplace for MLB, which actually makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and the lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. My personal favorite feature of the Game Time app is their seat layout. It shows you exactly the price around the stadium in each section in a very clean, user-friendly way. They have all-in pricing. Toggling this feature shows the total up front with no surprise fees at checkout. The lowest price guaranteed, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app today, create an account, and use the code CINCY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. All right, well, let's kind of wrap this up, but we could talk all night here.
Got me worked up now. You don't need to kick me out yet.
We try to keep the spring training short and sweet, so we'll just have to bring you on.
As a listener, you can keep going, man. I need the time. I need the, you know, I got some long drives. I need to, you know, you can debate every position, right? We could, you know, talk about the catching situation. I mean, we could do it all, really. The division too is super interesting, I think. I was telling you before we started, I think I listened to a couple of different Red shows. I think almost everyone, I think, universally is sleeping on the Brewers. I just want to know, what do they have to do to get a little respect for how they've done things? Because I get it. Like, you look at that lineup last year, and I kept saying, like, how do they keep winning? How do they keep winning? Like, this lineup doesn't scare me at all. How is this happening? And like, the answer is pitching and defense, right? And I know they traded Corbin Burns. I know they lost Woodruff. They added Rhys Hopkins. I'm not writing them off yet. I need to see them die, have their hearts ripped out, and die again before I like count the Brewers out. Because I don't know. I guess I thought the Corbin Burns trade was a bit light of their return, but I've kind of talked myself into. I mean, you're trading 1 year of production for potentially 12 years of major league production between a shortstop and a pitcher that they believe in. And if Hall is the dude, like, they've done it again in this. We got to deal with this guy for 6 more years. So I just appreciate their model. I think their model is kind of what we can hope for as Reds fans in terms of, look, if you get near the end of some of these deals, yeah, you do need to fork over that value for more long-term value. I like how the Reds are building things from the bottom up, and I think they're going to still just keep stacking as much talent as they possibly can. Have the number 2 overall pick in the next draft looks like an insane win with some of the options they're going to have there. And that's part of the reason why we haven't seen them trade any prospect capital and are still holding on to kind of figure out what they have. Cause I think the situation is just going to look a little different at the end of the season.
Yeah. The Dylan Cease trade makes the Corbin Burns trade look a lot better in my opinion. When you kind of look at just, you know, teams just aren't paying these massive prospect hauls for short-term deals. I'm with you. I'll never count out the Brewers. I've learned my lesson. This team could run out a AAA roster, and I'd say they'll still find a way to be competitive. But I just meant Freddie Peralta, Colin Ray, Jacob Judas, Joe Ross, and DL Hall. If they win the division with that rotation, I mean, I'll just throw my hands up and say I quit. I mean, I don't know. But this division, I've said it all offseason, and I'm sorry for saying it again. I think all five teams could win. I think all five teams could finish last. I think the margin for error is so small. And as much as the injuries have stunk for the Reds, we got to remember, the Brewers are down Devin Williams, who's a massive, massive loss for them. Maybe the MVP almost on that team. And I know the closers, that's usually a very ridiculous thing to say. But when you look at that team, he's up there. He's up there as of their most valuable players. The Cardinals have Tommy Edman on the IL. The Pirates, they've lost a couple guys. So everyone's dealing with it. But I think health might be what determines this division at the end of the year.
Yeah, the Pirates, I've been reading about how they're, quote, up to something down there as well. They seem to be hitting the ball hard this spring. O'Neill Cruz is absolutely crushing the ball. It is a huge mystery. I don't know what to, I don't know why. The Cubs are the one that I still don't know why they're as favored as they are or have the odds that they do. I'm not really buying what they're selling. But you know what they also do? They really play some good defense up the middle. And that's the... that's what I keep coming back to. I think back on that Danzy. Remember the Hunter Renfro walk-off fielder's choice that he had that Dansby Swanson snagged in the gap, almost turned the double play. That was the moment. Was just like, okay, that again was a reminder of how much defense really matters. And that's just where I'm. I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm really excited for opening day. I think we, as we're standing right now, we have too much riding on the health of Matt McClain and the boom of Ellie. Like, I think if we don't get both of those things this year, I don't mean the big bang, the nuclear, 10 win season of Ellie that I think we all think can happen. I just think he's without him being like a 4-win player this year and McClain being healthy and being a 4-win player, I don't know where these plus over 81 wins are going to come from. That's just, it's just asking a lot for some guys that I don't know how high their ceilings are.
Yeah, it's just, how many guys hit that like 75th percentile or whatever percentile it is. And it's really hard to predict. This is a very hard team to predict and a very hard division to predict. And I guess it makes it exciting. Also makes me nervous. I just please get off to a good start so we at least kind of have that going, and it's not an uphill climb all year. If they could just get off to like a 11-9 start or something like that, I think I'll be able to go take a deep breath. All right, we're in it for the season. Let's have some fun and see where this goes.
And this may be anecdotal. I have no idea how you would even back this up, but it seemed like that middle part of the year, obviously the crazy hot streak, but they were really healthy in that time period. Mm-hmm. Votto was coming back, and it just felt like 1-9, there was no breather, right? And when the injuries started hitting, it wasn't just like the production they lost, but also the hitters that were there and healthy, maybe not getting as much to hit, maybe the lineup's just not as fearsome. It just felt like they went from, the glue, whatever that was holding them together, really ticked everybody up an extra 15% or so. And then not only did the losing that production hurt them, it just felt like the guys that were left over went back down past that 15%, down another 15%, and their offense went into a complete funk. So that's what has me nervous about the offense is, like, I love this idea of like, yeah, we'll be 11 strong when it comes to bats, maybe 12 strong when it comes to bats. And like, you're not going to get a breather. You're not going to get a pinch hit breather. Lefty coming in, you're not going to get a breather here. Righty coming in, you're not going to get a breather. I think that gives them the best chance over 162 games. And yeah, Marte thing really hurt. I know we're going to get an extra year of control out of him. That's the optimistic look at it. But it just feels like already things are just a little wobbly. But
Your tweet made me feel a lot better because we were driving. I think we were like in Utah. We were literally in the middle of nowhere. I was trying to we had no service for like an hour and a half. And I finally got some on Twitter and your tweet popped up first. Extra year control. I went, hey, you know what? This is so bad. I can live with this now. But it's going to be a weird situation if he comes back and helps this team get into the playoffs and then
can't play,
isn't able to play. That's going to just be brutal.
And man, there's some, I still have some questions there. It, I need to know some details. Is this something that has been going on for a while? Is this something that you, I mean, when you're injecting something, that's not a, I took something and I didn't know I was, shouldn't have been taken, right? This is a concern, really. And it's such a different situation now that there are rules in place and suspensions in place. Like, he's going to serve his punishment and he'll be able to come back. And that, you know, it's not treated the same way it was in the mid-2000s when it was just like shame, shame, shame. We're not, there's no actual rules, but you're just going to play with shame for the rest of your career. But it's just, it's really uncomfortable, man. It really is, has me, you know, wondering, that crazy boost we saw at the end of last year, was that induced by steroids? Like, that, that's a concern I have when it comes to him. And, you know, maybe it's just injury related and whatnot. Reds obviously aren't sharing any details, but I'd like to hear some details on that, because the Reds are banking a lot on this dude, a lot. I mean, I've tweeted extend Nuelvi Marte a lot of times, because I really do think he is going to be a fantastic, fantastic hitter. I think he's very light, very extremely light. Don't get too take this comparison too literally, but he reminds me of Miguel Cabrera a little bit as a young hitter. He's not going to be a Hall of Famer. He's not going to have 3,000 hits and 500 home runs. I'm not saying that. He just kind of reminds me of his vibe in the plate when Miguel Cabrera was really young. And I don't think his ceiling is that high, but I really, really like that, watching that guy play baseball.
Can you extend a player while they're serving a suspension?
I hope it should be cheaper, right? I would think it's cheaper.
Now's the time, Crawl. Get on it.
This is completely baseless. I've been kind of screaming, extend what you can extend. And obviously it's worth pointing out, Matt McClain and Ellie are Boris clients. And like, Boris isn't going to do it. Just not going to do it. I mean, if you ever read anything about his quotes on these contracts, he's not going to do it. But the Bobby Witt thing has me wondering how far the Reds would be away from giving Ellie like a Julio Rodriguez deal. And I mean, I could spend another half an hour trying to just explain the Julio Rodriguez deal. It's so complicated, but there's all kinds of escalators and, you know, player options, club options, and all this possibility of keeping him another 12 years or whatever, but, and make $470 million if he does all that. But I'm wondering if the Reds have any appetite for some kind of deal that says, gives Ellie or gives them an option to go past, like, you know, obviously get a couple club options past the free agent years, and then say they have an option to extend another 5 years at $160 million at, you know, at age whatever that might be. That might look really, really good at that point. And then you can call Elliot a Red for 12 years. People are really excited about this dude. People are showing up at the ballpark to watch this dude. And if they know they're going to see him for 10 plus years instead of six, I really think that can have a long-term impact on the club. But it's not going to be cheap. It will not be cheap at all. It'll hurt, but I don't know what you're waiting for if you're the Reds. Like, you have this dude that is going to amaze people, that is probably going to hit. If you're waiting for him to hit before you sign it, it's going to cost a lot more. It's a gamble, I know, but at minimum, he can field and he can run and he can bring people to their feet and bring people to the stadium. I would love to see it. I really would love to see it.
Yeah, he's about the first player since like Joey Votto where I felt almost blank check. Like, you try to make it happen. I wonder though, with you know, Boris having probably his worst offseason ever, if maybe there's a possibility of some players going, you know what, hey, I'm getting offered this money, I'm not going to take as much stock in what you say. I'm not missing out on this opportunity. I do know Ellie had some sort of insurance policy that when he was in the minor leagues, there's some agency that will take so much of their salary when they get it, and they pay them now. So Ellie's a little bit different, where I don't think he's just making the league minimum. I think he is getting some extra funding right now. I don't know exactly how much or how substantial that is, but that is another factor into this that's different than, you know, maybe a lot of other old situations. But I'm with you. There's not many contracts that I'd be like, yeah, that's too much for Ellie. I think you don't get him now, you're going to run out of time.
Yeah. And yeah, the Rodriguez contract, I've just pulled it up, is the Corbin Carroll contract is interesting too. I mean, he got over $100 million, 10 or 11 years. I mean, obviously there's options and all kinds of crazy stuff in it, but That's big value, right? That's not a small amount of money. And if you're Ellie and you can guarantee yourself you're going to be a 100 millionaire, I'd be interested in that. I mean, I certainly would. What if you go break your leg and or something like that and you never run the same? I don't know. It's interesting. And I think you can get Marte prior to this suspension. I think you could have got him for 8 years, somewhere between $50 and $80 million, like, which is not crazy. And the Braves have a ton of those contracts that is obviously going to add a ton of value to them. I don't think you're going to get Elliott any kind of discount, anything like that, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Marte would kind of remind me of like a Brian Hayes type extension. I would think you'd be in that ballpark there. All right. Well, Sully, you got anything else you want to get off your chest while you're in full baseball podcasting mode here?
I'm really pumped for CES. I've watched a little bit of spring training here and there. He really looks like he's swinging the bat well with confidence. His debut confused me a lot. I know there's an adjustment period, but man, there was some following some of his at bats last year on game day early on where just like he's swinging at pitches 6 feet off the plate, like truly chasing everything. If there's a little bit of discipline in him, I think he can hit so many home runs and be a true, like we need him to take a huge leap too in terms of like 130 weighted runs created plus bat. We need one of those. And I think he's our best candidate for that. And I don't see a whole lot of reason why he wouldn't be able to fill that role this year. So he's one of the guys I'm not concerned about at all. I think he's going to mash this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this dude just rolls out of bed and can hit. Like he's kind of a unicorn almost in that regard, where there's not a lot of variance to him. He's just, I think he's always going to be able to hit. And yeah, he's a big, he's the one guy that has that ceiling other than Ellie. But is Ellie going to get there in 2024? I think that's probably a long shot. I'm not going to ever count Ellie out of anything. But I think that CES has probably the highest ceiling of any Reds hitter this year.
What would you predict Ellie's OPS to be this year?
Man, it's tough.
It's so hard.
I legitimately could see it being over 900. I could see it being like 750. I don't think he's going to be a below average hitter. I just, every level he got to every level he got to on the way up, it took him a little bit of an adjustment period, but then he found a way. I think 750 is about the lowest I could see it going, just because when you're talking about his speed, he's going to just get a lot of hits. And I think he's going to put the ball in play more this year. I think he's made a conscious effort of that. I'm interested to see if he starts bunting. I don't know how much I'd have to kind of see that, see how much I could be for that. I don't mind the idea of him making the defense think, because how many times last year did we see defenses just do boneheaded things when Ellie De La Cruz was at the plate? So I don't want to see him trying to bunt for a hit, you know, five times a week or anything like that. But I also don't mind putting that in the back of the defender's head, you know, making them have to play their defense differently and have to already be out of a poor adjustment defensively for a guy that can tap a ball and get on base. So I'm not the whole, like, why would you ever have Ellie De La Cruz bunt crowd? But I'm a little cautious about going too far with that as well. Almost like with Hunter Green with the extra pitches. Like, I like the idea of it, but I don't want to see him go too far away from what makes him great.
Yeah. So just again, worth noting, Ellie had a 799 OPS against righties last year and 495 against lefties. I mean, he was a terrible hitter on the right, from the right-handed side. He had 328 on base and 471 slugging from that left side. So if he can just become a 700 OPS bat on the right-handed side and he progresses a little bit on the left-handed side, like all of a sudden already you've got a 775 guy, right? Assuming about a 3-to-1 split in at bat. So that 775 seems like a nice number for him that I think will be that's a solid season. That's hard to do at the major league level. When you strike out as much as he does, that's a hard number to get to. But I just hope the contact when he does make it is driving it, is getting it up in the air. I know a lot of people with his speed want to see him hitting the ball on the ground. Like, we want that ball lifted. We want that ball in the air. We want that ball driving. And that's what I was excited to see, if he and Marte, you know, started working on elevating that launch angle a little bit. I mean, he only had a 3.6 launch angle last year. I'm not an expert on those things, but that's low. And we need that thing, you know, above 10 if we want to see him get the most out of his potential.
I'm not sure he even needs the OPS more than like just over 600 against lefties to be really, really good all-star caliber player if he progresses against right hand. I mean, I think you see this guy OPS 900 against right hand, 600 against left. I think that's an all-star player, or at least fringe at that.
Yeah, I haven't seen. I mean, how many right-handed at-bats has he gotten this spring? I mean, I haven't been able to watch a whole lot or see what that looks like. But
the Reds have faced a lot of lefties. I can't say that I've always been fully dialed into to who he's facing, but I do know the Reds have faced a incredible, like they faced the Angels' two bulk pitchers today were both left-handed. I know a couple of the spring training games we went to was just lefty after lefty after lefty. It's been really bizarre how many lefties they have. So I assume he has a little bit. I don't think there's anywhere that shows our platoon splits for spring training games. So, yeah.
38 plate appearances, still got that 34% strikeout rate. I mean, I still just think, you know, there's going to be some adjustments to him this year in his approach and everything, but I still think we're going to have those three strikeout games where he looks terrible. Mm-hmm. Like, there's going to be pitchers that just completely, you know, he is overmatched against. He's got a 526 batting average on balls in play. Again, we're working on small samples, but that's obviously unsustainable. So his numbers look really good with the 421. I mean, his OPS was, I think, over 1,000 coming into today, which, again, small sample, but there's a little bit of fool's gold in there with the batting average on balls in play. But let's start lifting that ball. Need more than one homer out of every 38 plate appearances for him, for sure.
I think we'll see that. I need to put in that bet for the over home runs. I think that's just that's free money. That's free money.
The steals is that one's the free money. I don't even know what it is, but he's going to steal so many bases this year. I think he's legitimately going to try to steal every time he gets on base.
Yeah. How many? Do you have it up? How many stolen bases does he have in camp?
He has 4.
Oh, yeah, I don't feel like he's run as much in camp. Maybe they told him don't run.
Dude, I sure hope so, especially after the Friedel thing, man. It's like, dude, what do you need to prove here, man? We know you can run. Like, you don't need I don't need more head first slides out of you in spring training. I am afraid he's going to hurt himself sliding some point this year.
I will say, I was actually there for the Friedel injury. It was very like a line drive. Like, it was a reaction. It wasn't like he was trying to make some ridiculous, you know, over the shoulder catch or something. It was purely like, if you're a baseball player, you have to dive for the ball. It was just a straight reaction right to him. But man, is that a more of a gut punch than Marte?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Marte didn't fully have a spot, really. I mean, it as much as I love him and you know, would hate to see him start at AAA. I just feel like they were kind of waiting for an injury for him to have a spot. I mean, between Candelario, I mean, if you're not going to move India, I mean, between Candelario and CES, you know, I don't know where he would have played every day. I think Candelario's value has got to come from being able to play a really good third base. So again, if they'd have kept him down for a while and been able to keep him for 2028 or for 2030 or whatever it is that to get the extra year, you're going to, We don't need to be dumping these guys into free agency early, right? We don't need, like, the 21, 22 age seasons. Like, we're going to burn them with Ellie. Like, that's kind of part of the deal. That's why I want to lock them up. Like, McLean, look, at the end of 6 years, we're kind of dumping them into free agency at a time that's, you know, might be around the time when you should do it. And I just hate dumping guys out into the world at age 27, age 28, because they're about to peak. And that's when, you know, you're using up their young years and you maybe could have had their better production years, but
yeah, we'll see. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. All right, well, let's wrap it up there, Solly. This has been a blast. Love talking baseball with you. What do you, before I get you out of here, what are you guys up to on the No Laying Up podcast? What are you guys doing these days?
We just had a big week at the Players this last week, a bunch of shows. We got the Masters coming up here in a couple weeks. We're actually going over to Scotland to do a little filming. We got a bunch of stuff coming up on our YouTube channel. We've been loading up the content cannon. We just need to get through the editing bay and get it back out into the world. But it's coming hot and heavy here soon. I don't know how much baseball I'm going to be able to be following over these next several months, but I'll be following it all. I don't know how much I'm going to be able to actually watch. I actually got one of those Apple Vision Pros, the headset thing, because of how excited I was for the potential to watch baseball games on that, and like the future possibilities of like immersive baseball games is something that because I'm going to have to be watching baseball while I'm doing something else, and so I got one of those to be able to watch some baseball while I do other stuff around the house, and I just hope I don't forget about my daughter. That's the only thing I'm afraid of. So
yeah, you won't be able to do that. That's impossible. All right. Well, my man, appreciate you. We'll talk again soon.
Cheers.
All right. The Reds will play two split squad games on Wednesday. First up, 4:05 p.m. Eastern at home against the Rangers in Goodyear. That game will be on 1360 WSAI. Rhett Lauder will get the start in that game for the Reds. Other game also at 4:05, be on the road against the White Sox. White Sox radio only for this one. So you could listen to that via the MLB app. And Lyon Richardson will be getting the start for the Reds. And probably by the time you're listening to this, the MLB season has actually already started. 6:05 a.m. on Wednesday morning, the Dodgers and the Padres kick off the baseball season in Japan. Well, thanks so much for listening today to Chatterbox Reds. Appreciate all the support. If you don't, hit subscribe to Chatterbox Reds wherever you're listening to this podcast. Make sure you do that now as we get close to the regular season. This is the only place that you can always count on the morning after all 162 games. You'll have a podcast in your feed bright and early recapping the game. So be sure to subscribe and don't miss out on that. If you like what you're listening to, please leave us a quick 5-star review wherever you listen to this podcast. Really helps us out. If you don't like what you're listening to, just don't leave a review at all. And, of course, off the bench on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube, 10 a.m. to noon, Trace Fowler is back hosting, talking about all the NFL free agency news, March Madness, my favorite time of the year, and a lot more, maybe some Reds talk as well. So 10 a.m. to noon, that's Monday through Friday on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. Links to all that kind of stuff is down in the episode notes below. Also, be sure to check out the No Laying Up podcast that Sully does. Probably don't need my promotions since they have the number one golf podcast in the United States. But nonetheless, be sure to check them out. Well, thanks as always for listening. Hope that you have a fantastic Wednesday. And most importantly, go Reds.